What I'm concerned about is my relationship with the poor, your relationship with the poor, not the church's relationship with the poor or an institution's relationship with the poor. So there will be a number of places tonight and in the next few days where we'll have a chance to share our stories and put that together. I'd like to start by talking about why I raised the question in the first place, and it's my style to just do that in a series of observations. First of all, in the setting that I am a pastor, we have a 120-year-old church located in a neighborhood of Minneapolis which is predominantly poor. And I don't want to define what I mean by poor quite yet, because we're going to come up with some composite of that later. So you can use your imaginations at this point, or guess. But there's a lot of poor people in that neighborhood, a lot of ethnically diverse peoples in that neighborhood. And our congregation has, like I think many of yours, spent a lot of its energy and attention on the poor for maybe the last, very deliberately, at least in the last 10 years, but possibly in the last 25 years, pretty consciously. We have now, some of the programs that the church is doing include an emergency shelter for the homeless. We have a language project for Southeast Asian refugees where we teach English and other survival skills. We do an enriched child care for the children of those Southeast Asian refugee students and just Southeast Asian refugee residents of the neighborhood. We have an after-school program and a neighborhood recreational program that relates to the neighborhood youth. We provide van shopping services for the elderly. We're involved in a variety of ways in other kind of broader networks, including a coalition of churches which works to address primarily housing and economic development issues. One of the projects that this coalition of churches does is to organize people into small work groups, and we work on the housing in the neighborhood, usually unskilled renovation or improvement of housing. All of this work puts us in touch with people in our neighborhood who are poor on a pretty regular basis. We are rubbing shoulders almost all the time. However, we have not seen that our own members are developing friendships or ongoing relationships with these same people. Okay? So we're spending a lot of attention and energy on the poor, but at least naturally, relationships aren't emerging, aren't blossoming. For myself, I live in this same neighborhood that our church is located in, called the Phillips neighborhood. I've lived there for 5 years with my wife and my family. We have occasion to walk the streets often with our children and our dog. And for those of you who have small children and or a dog, that's sometimes a great conversation starter when you meet people. It's pretty easy, at least, to talk with children or to pet an animal when you're walking by. So we have a chance to talk with or converse with our neighbors, those around us. But we're not experiencing that we are developing friendships with those same people. It doesn't go beyond those initial contacts. So I'm including myself in this whole discussion as one for whom my own energy and attention is often directed at the poor, but my relationships aren't, I'm not fostering relationships with the poor. As well, I look at a lot of the people who are committed to living in the neighborhood. There's a core of people who are very active on behalf of the community, who are living there intentionally. I imagine that some of you might be living in a poor community for the same kind of reasons. They are very active in neighborhood organizations, very active in social agencies that direct their attention and services towards the poor. Their friendships, largely as I observe it, however, are with each other and with other people who are concerned about the poor. They're not necessarily with the poor in the neighborhood. And finally, just my friends, a lot of my friends have the same kind of passion for social justice agendas. And their friendships aren't being fostered at any greater rate with the poor. It seems as if, for the most part, and I'm seeing some nodding, that while our church and all of these people are paying attention to the poor and are a part of a service network, there's not a relationship that that seems to be emerging from all of the advocacy and the attention. And I had just written a little comment. It seems like the poor make better clients than friends. And I'm curious about why that is. John Fish, I think, alluded to some of that in some of his discussion. We may parallel that a bit. Okay, those are some observations. For me, then, I'm trying to do some reflecting on that, or I've done some reflecting on that in my own ministry. As I understand the Jewish community of Jesus' day, of the Old Testament and New Testament periods, actually, it doesn't appear to me, in what I read, that those communities of people were any more inclusive of the poor. It seems as if there were the same problems of exclusion. The poor seemed to be on the fringe. And while there were probably services that they provided as well for the poor, it doesn't appear that friendship seemed to be formed naturally in that period either. So we're not talking about a new historical phenomenon. It seems like this is an age-old problem. In contrast to that, as I look at Jesus' life, it appears that his fellowship was directed more deliberately at the poor. And because the stories are sparse, it's a little hard to know exactly what was happening. But when I read stories about Jesus sitting on a hillside and talking with people that I presume might be poor, or when I read stories about Jesus going to someone's house and sitting and eating with them, or Jesus meeting someone at the well and talking with them, it at least occurs to me, and I think even more than that, I think I believe that Jesus directed much of his attention and friendships with the poor. He seemed at least to be comfortable in spending time with them on a social level, just conversing, eating with the poor. It's hard to know for sure exactly what that looked like. But for me, it appears that Jesus shows an openness to being in relationship with the poor, not just on a service level, but also on a friendship level. And the other observation that I'd like to make, but not really spend a lot of time with, because of my agenda for the evening, is that as I understand the body of Christ, the notion of the body of Christ, I understand that to be an inclusive community, an inclusive fellowship, that I would say ought to have room for the poor. It seems that the poor ought to have as easy an access to that as any other people's. So that wherever there are people gathered who call themselves the body of Christ, it's my conviction that the poor ought to be a part of that as much as they're a part of the makeup of the communities from which the body of Christ draws its membership. Okay? And so out of all that stuff, then I'm left, at least for me, with three things. And it's from that starting place that I want to do some reflecting on what's going on with our relationships. The first is, it seems, and I'm at this point going to speak a little bit for you as well, so tell me if this doesn't speak for you. It seems that there's, at the start, at least a desire for connectedness with the poor. There's a desire to connect with, to be in relationship with. I'll just leave it at that. Secondly, it feels like for me, and maybe for you, at least for the people of my church, and possibly for most of the people who are involved helping the poor in the neighborhood, we are stuck relating to these people largely as advocates. We're just kind of stuck at that level. We don't seem to be able to move beyond being service providers, helpers. And finally, and this is maybe the most nebulous, but for me, it's becoming more clear, and it's one place where I can try to fit in something's afoot in the universe. It seems that I'm feeling the Spirit's tug to do something about that disparity. I'm feeling a tug to at least ask questions about what's happening for me and for the people of my congregation that we don't seem to find grounds to develop friendships with the Lord. And if you feel that tug as well, then I think all the better for what we're doing here. Okay, that's the stuff that kind of frames the question for me. What I'd like to do with the time today, and this is largely what we'll focus on in this evening's time together, is to look at what's going on in our relationships with the poor. And to do that, I need at least a couple things. One is your response. Okay, at this point it's kind of an audience participation thing. And the other will be risking a little bit, because what I want to do is first to talk about us. Who are we as individuals? What are our stories? And then I want to talk about the poor. And I'm not really interested in telling you who the poor are, because I think as individuals, our relationship with the poor depends on who we think they are and what we think they're about. Okay? So our own perceptions and experience are more important than what I would tell you the poor are. I'm really not interested with income levels, etc., except as we feel that they're significant. So this part of the time together, I'm calling laying our stories side by side. Our story, at this point, I'm choosing to say that we are one group of people and the poor are another, and we can talk about whether or not that's an accurate way to talk about the relationship or the poor. So I think what I'd like to do is to use this board, and I'm not great at kind of writing things down, keeping my body out of the way so people can see it, but I'd like to put some things up. This first part of the exercise, what I'd like to do is to simply have us talk a bit, and it might feel a little bit simplistic, talk a bit about our own stories, real briefly, sharing so that we can get a general picture. What are our stories like? What are the things, and by that I'm thinking of us in terms of kind of social beings, but also the stuff we bring with us, so that what's happening in my mind when I ask that question is, when you get together with people here at Holden, if you were to sit down at the table, and someone, they usually don't say it this way, and someone were to say, what's your story? What are the kind of things that come out? That's sort of one question. And then the other two, what are the things you like to talk about? What are the things you like to do? So we're kind of defining who we are, okay? And what I want to do is just build a kind of composite picture. It's not my goal to say to end up arriving at a place where we say, oh, aren't we all so much alike? But I will want to build a kind of composite about who we are and what our stories look like. And they may look alike and they may not. I don't know. I haven't done this with you before. And then we'll also, this is not going to work for me to sit on the table. It felt real comfortable. And then over here what I'd like to do is build the same kind of story with the poor, and then look at what the two mean when you are reflecting on relationships. So if you could think in kind of brief terms, because I'm going to try to summarize it with one or two words. What's your story? What does it include? What do you like to talk about? What do you like to do? Who are you? Don't have to be existentialist.
Talk about family, children, grandchildren.
Okay, family.
Service.
Okay, can you be a little more specific?
Well, I'm a librarian. I guess I would call it a teaching profession.
Vocation, is that?
Education.
Education, yep.
Politics,
yes. How could you forget that here? Good. Hopefully we don't forget it anywhere.
Recreation.
Yes. Fondness of mine. Recreation. This part of the class requires that I can spell, I guess.
Travel,
okay. I'm not sure how well people can see this when I get down towards
the bottom. What's going on in the church?
Okay.
Let's talk about that.
Could I just call it church concerns?
Sure.
Social concerns.
And social concerns.
The weather.
Yes. The weather.
Finance.
Okay. Good. We're rolling. Finances. I'll put economics because they are kind of
getting lighter.
It is getting lighter. The blue one didn't show up real well. I'll shake it real hard. We'll see if we can.
There's a black one over here.
Pardon?
There's a black one over here.
Great. Might even be able to.
It might not work
visible.
Either.
Yeah.
We're running them dry this week.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
That's pretty good.
Okay. Other things?
Sports.
Go Twins.
Why Twins? There are other teams. Minnesota.
Minnesota. This could start to get silly. I can't spell that. I'll
just say home.
Home.
Texas.
Hobbies.
What's that?
Hobbies.
Hobbies, yes.
Books.
Books, yes.
Books and movies.
Books and movies, I may not want a whole lot more.
Gossip.
Drama.
Drama.
We got the music in there.
Yes, drama, music, good. Maybe I do want some more. These are.
Yeah, gossip came from over there.
Gossip.
Religion.
Well, we have church concerns.
We'll put religion down.
Yeah.
Okay, good, a good list. This will be helpful, I think. I think it's fairly obvious, just as we talk about ourselves in relationship with other people, a list like this, for me, these things not only show what we focus on when we tell our stories, but they say they also say what's unique and important about us. They reflect our struggles. They reflect our life. And it's my suspicion that because this group shares so many of these things in common, that when we come together at a place like Holden Village, we find ourselves fairly comfortable. Because it seems like you could pick almost any of these, from gossip to social concerns, and sit down with another person in this group, and you have kind of a connection. We have that in common. So that community seems easy to come by, friendships seem easy to come by. All right. What I'd like to do is build a similar list for the poor. Okay? I'm still not telling you what the poor are, but we're going to define the poor. What are their stories about? What do they talk about? What do they do? What are the things that we think about as unique, important, descriptive of the poor?
Living conditions.
Okay.
Family.
Pardon?
Family.
Family? Mm-hmm.
Employment and unemployment. Money and the lack of it.
Social services.
This board is kind of flopping on me now.
Welfare.
Yes.
I think material possessions would have to be on there too.
Mm-hmm.
Illness or health concerns, maybe. Drugs.
That could be on that side, too.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Transportation.
Educational opportunities.
Okay.
Failure.
Unemployment.
Okay, we've got that here. Thanks.
Weather.
The weather, great. Yep. Okay.
Sports. TV.
Loss of hope.
Okay. Now this is... The marker was starting to run out when I was writing loss of hope. I wonder if significant about that. Help with hunger.
Children.
Where they're going to sleep.
Shelter? Is that sufficient?
Panhandling.
Okay.
Safety.
Safety. Let's see. Boy. Well, you probably won't be able to read this, but panhandling, I put down. DLE, maybe? I'm assuming that is different than what we do in the kitchen.
Prejudice.
Politics, yep. Try to stand back so you can see the list. Writing sideways isn't going to help you to read it, but
more room. They would talk about religion too. Do you have that?
No, we don't have that yet. I don't remember right
now. No, I don't think so.
The homeless are going to talk about where they're going to get the food, where they're going to get the clothes.
Yep, shelter.
Well, that means it's your shelter.
Yeah. Good though, good concerns. Well, I think for my purposes, this is a very good list to work with. So why don't we call that complete? Is the lighting set? Can you see that at all? Is that? Well, what I'm going to sit over here. What we'll hope is that we remember some of these things. May not. I have from this list just a few questions that I'd like us to really spend most of the rest of the time with talking about today. The first being, are you familiar with the stuff of their stories? I'm going to assume that most of us are familiar with what makes up our stories. By familiar with, that's a part of our experience. Everything from political involvement to high school or college education. Rooting for sports teams, church participation, fluency in Minnesotan or whatever your dialect is. So I'll assume that we're familiar with the stuff that we listed first, our stories, that we're able to relate to that. What is our familiarity with many of the things that we've listed under the poor?
What do you mean, areas that are in common?
Well, actually I'm thinking, at what points do we experience do we connect with their stories, with their experience? For example, are there places where we also use social services? I mean, is that a common ground? Yeah, we could call it just common ground. Okay. Trying to identify where there is some commonality, where we touch.
Family, for sure.
Family.
Okay.
Living conditions.
Not quite as much.
Well, it's different. Maybe they have an apartment and you have a house, but it's still a living condition.
Okay, I'll circle it for now.
Movies, sports, TV.
Okay, movies.
TV.
TV.
Music. Religion. TV.
Religion goes with church concerns. I guess.
Transportation.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
we'll circle them first and then we can talk about it a little bit, you know?
And politics.
Politics.
They're both places.
Children.
Weather.
Drugs.
Yep.
Favorites.
Yeah.
Material possessions.
What I think we'll do after we circle some of these, there may be some that won't get circled, at least as I look at this. What I'd like to do after we circle some of these is maybe talk about them individually to explore that in a little more depth. So at this point, it's all right just to kind of brainstorm it.
Social services, if say you are working with that, you're an employee or a provider.
Were the person who said this, did you think of use of or just?
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe for this purpose, understanding this as something we use. I suppose we could still connect, though, if you work for it. I mean,
well, you're dealing with those people on a daily basis.
I don't.
Safety.
Educational opportunities. That's a concern for both.
Yep.
Health concerns. In the middle.
Thanks. What's left so far is food stamps, money and the lack of it, welfare, hunger, shelter, loss of hope, panhandling, and prejudice. Do you have any bidders on any of the...
Money.
You could.
Prejudice.
Money. Do you circle money and the lack of it, or just money?
Money.
Okay. Good.
Could be lack of it, or it's
still...
Yeah.
I mean, for example, health.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about certain health problems, and they can talk about the same health problems, but in addition to that, we can talk about the health problems that come from the diseases that come from unclean or unsanitary living conditions. Stuff that we don't even know about.
And we talk about going to health spas, you know, keep in shape and keep healthy.
I think probably most of those things, the subject is the same, but the approach is going to be a different one or at a different level, perhaps.
Education is, you know, just a matter for them to keep their kids going to school.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for trying to get our kids to college somehow. That's
yep.
What we thought about maybe. In a family where they need to have an income from the kid that gets out of high school when he's 16 or 15.
Yeah, good, good.
Or we're talking about housing. I mean, we're mm-hmm. talking about the house we bought or we'd like to buy, and they're talking about an apartment with rats running around. You know, it's just...
Okay, good. This is good discussion. This is exactly what I wanted to get at, so we're doing it.
Or with housing, they're talking about having enough money to even get into a place. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might not be an apartment. It might be a rundown house. They might not even be able to find a place that will take them with the $50 they have in hand.
Plus, they might be living down the street.
A list of people who want to get into those housings, mm-hmm. and before you can even get into it, you got to get from the bottom of the list up to the top of the list, mm-hmm. and that takes sometimes 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you live?
So what I see then is there's a lot of subjects that we have in common, but yet they're not in common quite,
mm-hmm.
because we're talking about different aspects of them.
But I also think it depends on your definition of poor. I mean, maybe somebody who's had a house and lost his job and lost his house and he's suddenly in the pool living with the poor, maybe you could talk to him on the same levels because maybe he once was where you are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But some of them have never been there.
There's...
What is your definition of poor?
For me?
Yeah.
I think that I want to answer that in two different ways. One is that it feels like we've come up with a kind of intuitive consensus of what we think the poor is. It seems by the ease with which we shared observations, reflections on who the poor are, we have some sense of, something there is telling us that this is what the poor are. One, for me, one large part of being poor is lack of money. I don't know that requires that one live below the poverty level as determined by the U.S. government or anyone else.
It also depends on how they spend their money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think mm-hmm. it's even just that, because in a city like Los Angeles where I live, you can work full time and you can mm-hmm. be working 40 hours a week and be homeless because there's no way you can afford an apartment
mm-hmm.
on minimum wage at 40 hours a week.
And in our city, well, in our shelter, our emergency shelter, it's predominantly men, though not exclusively so, that stay there. Most of the people in our shelter work. Some of them even work close to full time. But they are faced with a choice of whether or not they want to afford a house or food and clothing and other necessities. And they can't afford both. So they choose to stay in our shelter and have money for food and some other necessities.
And they're predominantly the minimum paid positions.
Almost
too,
all
like
of us.
McDonald's or housekeepers, stuff like that. They really can't save enough for first and last and the deposit.
Are they allowed to contribute anything towards the cost of the shelter? Do you do that at all?
They're allowed.
Are they permitted to give part of the money they make to the running of the shelter if they choose to?
Yes, we don't have anyone who contributes money to the shelter, though our guests have built shelving and cubicles for their gear. They've painted and laid tile and done other kinds of work in their setting. Some of their labor helped to help with the construction of two showers that now we have in our church basement for their use. So they're giving of their talents, but rarely contributing financially.
Well, in a sense, they have maybe more hope than somebody who has a fairly decent income, who's has a cocaine addiction, has maybe less sense of hope than somebody who has a place to stay in.
I see, as David pointed out, a similarity there. I think perhaps our priorities are a little different than theirs are.
In what way? Can you just expand on that a bit?
We will worry about money in one way, where they will worry more about survival. We will worry about, can we afford a new car next year, or can we afford to send the boy to school, to college? It's just our priorities are different.
That word that you use for me is, at least has become possibly the most descriptive word right now of my own understanding of where the poor are at, the survival issue. It seems as if for me, I take for granted that I'll have a place to stay, food to eat. I don't worry about that. I may have more or less money. I may not be able to buy a new TV set or whatever, but I don't worry about my daily needs. It feels as if the poor almost always do.
The piece that I find frustrating is that my priority then, because my survival needs are taken care of, I can think about things like self-actualization, which is a way of talking about higher education and thinking reflectively like we do up here. I mean, I'm wealthy enough to be at Holden Village. Even if I'm bartering my skills for my time here, you know, I'm still wealthy enough to be here. So I can think reflectively about the food that I eat and the lifestyle that I lead and whether or not I'm going to buy another stereo, you know, that kind of stuff. But where I get caught then is, given that that's the kind of plane on which I live, I feel an incredible amount of guilt when I come face to face, say, with a woman in our congregation named Mildred Hammer, who was on her own at 14 because her mother and father abandoned her at 2. She's lived in 19 foster homes. And that is the sum total of her conversation with me when we talk. But I'm just overwhelmed by guilt when I listen to that and frustration on her behalf. But I feel like that stops me from becoming her friend, because it's hard for me to talk to her, because I'm not interested in hearing every other day about her 19 foster homes. And it's hard for me to watch her scraping by at the end of the month and knowing that I have plenty to eat. It's really
but do we have to feel guilty about that?
No.
You know,
what? I don't know if I have to, but I sure do.
But I mean, is that something we need to work on? Is that's our problem then, that we're feeling guilty? I don't know. I feel like, you know, the Lord blessed us, and do we need to feel guilty about that? I mean, I think we need to maybe feel guilty enough so that we share and that we care about these people. But do I have to feel guilty because I have enough to eat? I don't know.
But that's the barrier between and you're being able to befriend that person. Your guilt conscience gets in the way, and you don't want to be confronted with that. That you know, it's disgraceful. destructive for your own self is what I'm hearing.
Can I stop the discussion just for a moment, because I'm hearing some real good conversation, and I would like to just frame it, because you are taking it at least where I would had hoped that it would go for the last part of our time together. And that is, now that we lay our stories side by side and see some differences, some rather significant differences of perception and experience, What I'd like us to spend some time on, and this will be a large focus of our time tomorrow as well, is what have we done personally to resolve that? And what are some of the issues that have surfaced for us? I suspect that some of us have at least attempted a relationship or a conversation or something with people who are poor, and now some feelings are surfacing. Some stuff has happened to all of us, I think. Kathy alluded to it with a woman named Mildred. What has happened to us when we have tried to bring ourselves with our stories or try to relate ourselves with our stories to people who, for whom this is the stuff of their stories? Guilt, I'm hearing, is one thing. We could talk more about that.
I knew I was going to retire last year, so I took a hard look 5 months ahead of time, and I started working with one shelter, and suddenly, when you're giving your time away, the phone starts ringing, and now I work at five. So I have a one little job to go to every day, and I'm on the staff of one shelter. Mm-hmm. But it's a whole different life, and you get to visit with people, and you get to know a lot of them by first name, and some of them are on drugs, and a lot of them are on alcohol. And, just to show you what a different ballpark we're in, one fellow by the name of Bob says, I'm going up to Minneapolis. And I said, well, how are you going to get up there, Bob? Well, I'm going to hitchhike up to Sioux City and catch the train. Well, I said, Bob, Amtrak doesn't run between Sioux City and Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And he laughed and he says, who needs Amtrak?
That's right.
I'm talking about the grain car.
That's right.
So, you see, it's just two different things.
Yeah.
But then as you get to talking with them.
It's a different language. When they say hop a train, some say hop a train.
So I said, where are you going to stay in Minneapolis? And he said, well, he told me the names of all the shelters. And he knew. Now he said, go out to Spokane. They really got liberal shelters out there. Anything goes out there. But Minneapolis, he said, they're pretty tight up there. And it's 21 days, and then you're out.
30 at our church. We're miserable.
They know.
Mm-hmm.
One
sure.
Day to the next.
Sure.
They know where to go, mm-hmm. How many days they can stay, who's got the best food, and the whole good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, okay, good, excellent. Carol.
One of the things that happens for me is I feel like I always have to be the helper, the teacher,
mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that as though they don't have many things that they could help me with.
Excellent.
Many gifts mm-hmm. they could share with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I'm with those folks, you know, I need to completely shift my understanding. Yeah, you know, they may have first come into my life because they needed a bag of groceries or because their child needed diapers or because they need transportation somewhere. But the minute I've gotten that taken care of, I need to shift my thinking and start discovering, not selfishly, but I think you know what I'm saying. What are the gifts that this person has that really are gifts that can enrich my life?
She is not a plant, by the way, but to make a bit of a plug for the next two sessions. Tomorrow, what I'd like to focus on, I've called it codependency, a poor universal language. I want to explore simply the dynamic of this helper-helpless relationship and how, or the advocate role, or other ways of naming it. But just look at that in particular. And then the last time together, I've entitled the session, Equally Human, Gifts in Disguise. Moving towards at least a faith perspective on what's possible in relationship. So we're not ending it at this point. We're kind of opening up the door to our discussion. Good stuff, though. I'm hearing lots of good things.
I feel the institutional church as a whole that's not including yours.
Mm-hmm. Right.
has really thrown money at this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found over the years, like John here, I worked in the shelter for the past 5 years. And I work at the satellite shelter now too. People are willing to write a check, but they're not willing to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think it's necessary to be quite the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not what we can do for the people, it's what the people can do for us.
Yeah. There's, we find ourselves fighting that sort of an integrity battle at our Savior's. Our shelter budget has grown from a first year operating budget, 6 month operating budget of about $10,000 to now, after 6 years, a $99,000 budget. And we have three full-time staff people, you know, two advocates.
Which is all necessary.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're doing a lot more work with, I mean, we're a lot more than just a bed and breakfast. But that money largely comes from our suburban supporters, the suburban support congregations. And they're really getting on the bandwagon now. They're very enthusiastic about supporting us with dollars. But not very, as they're not equally supportive with volunteers.
Do you feel a lot of those checks that you can rebuild all the way through?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. To me, that's a shame. That's
mm-hmm.
a shame. Mm-hmm.
It is.
Do you get FEMA funds?
We do. For about the last 4 years. Yep.
You get what FEMA. Did you say, John?
FEMA.
Federal funds.
Emergency okay. Management Agency.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And recently now some HUD money. Mm-hmm. We also get grants from corporations, foundations.
Our church in D.C. used to be had some of those same kind of things. And we also got support from the churches in the D.C. area. And at first it was just money, but we still always get the newsletter from there, and so we keep up what's happening. But now those same churches are coming out maybe once a month. They will take turns to serve a supper, or they'll come and serve breakfast, or they're really getting involved. The congregation bought some low-income housing, and the people from the various congregations came to help renovate it and to, you know, make it usable. So maybe, you know, that will happen also. People they give themselves mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. their money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a way, you could turn that to the suburban churches, for example, are in fact the needy. They need to mm-hmm. feel worthy. And so mm-hmm. once they give their money, then we have to give them a reason to be needed. That's the serving of the suburban. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of drawing mm-hmm. them in mm-hmm. little
yep.
by little.
And
the suburban
yep.
churches are like that, you know. They moved out to suburbia because they didn't want to be
that's right.
close to the problem.
Or I agree with you. And the question for us is, are we helping them to get, are we building a bridge? Are we creating an avenue for them to get involved, or are we helping them to avoid the problem? Are we giving them a chance to keep it at a distance?
And there's
it's
another
a hard
thing
one.
That just keeps cropping up in the world. There are a lot of we days.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yep.
we day in the suburbia, we mm-hmm. day in the mm-hmm. poorhouses. Mm-hmm. And it's just
that's yeah, and that's a part of our perception.
Yeah.
Oh. But even if we get involved with serving supper and stuff like that on an institutional level, we may not be inviting those people over for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, that's when you start being a friend.
Mm-hmm.
When you call them on Friday afternoon to say, what are you doing tonight? Let's get together. And gosh, you know, it's a lot easier to bring breakfast over to the shelter than to call somebody up and say, mm-hmm. you know, call Mildred up and say, come on mm-hmm. over, Mildred, we're just kind of hanging out.
Well, you can't call her up for one thing.
Well, she's never been called there. But that's, you know, that's an additional complication for suburban folks. And even serving supper may be, you know, I mean, we don't see that many members of our congregation inviting poor folks over.
But
they'll do their taxes for them.
But would the poor feel just as uncomfortable as we would? We would invite them over. Sure. I think they would feel very uncomfortable.
I don't think if you have a personal relationship with them, they would, though. I mean, if you've shared interest, if you've listened, if you've spent time together. Because I have some friend, I have a very close friend, who is extremely poor. She's just a victim, one situation after the other. And but she has got a beautiful spirit, a beautiful faith, and she's a wonderful prayer partner, and mm-hmm. we have become really good friends. And it's because of the personal relationship, not because of looking at each other in different categories. And I think when you can spend time with someone, that changes everything.
An experience I've had is rejection, where I came out of the grocery store and I had my groceries and someone, you know, guy came up, could you help me out? And I said, help yourself. No, only want money. Mm. Would not take my food. Mm-hmm. Only wanted money. Mm-hmm. You know, and so then you get in the situation of give people what they ask for or what they need. Yeah. So, you know, it makes you think about how God gives to us. Mm-hmm.
I don't think most of the people who go to shelters would accept an invitation to go into a home, because it's all some of them can do to bring themselves to a shelter where they know there'll be other people like them. Mm-hmm. I don't think many of them, most of them that I know, I don't think would be very comfortable going into any residence.
Well, they are living a life where they want to maybe detach themselves from any kind of commitment. Their only commitment is to survive, and to accept someone's friendship would involve a type of commitment, and many people really don't care for that, and we have to respect that preference, I guess, and not force ourselves on someone who doesn't want to have a friend either.
But yeah, I think there are poor and there are poor. I mean, like poor people who are deprived culturally and in every way. I think you have a hard time meeting them. But maybe someone who's poor and hadn't been poor all of his life and is poor now, I think that's different than somebody who's been poor all their life.
Yeah, I think most of the students that I've worked with. High school dropouts. They've been all ages. Some of them are in their 50s or 60s, but most of them tend to be teenagers, and they come from what I would call poor backgrounds, most of them. And I think the biggest problem that I would have relating to them, and that I have had, is that they just have no self-esteem. I spend all my time trying to convince them that they are important. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard for me to relate. It would be hard for me to have a close relationship with them, because I would feel like I was always being the big sister, you know, let me help you along. And so until I try to help some of them think they are somebody, you know, as Jesse Jackson says, you are. But until they get to that point, I feel like it's always, you know, me, big mama, looking down at them. Yep.
And that, like Carol's comment, I think is important enough. All of these things are important enough to spend sessions on. But that dynamic that you're raising up, like Carol's, is, I think, important enough so that I want to spend almost a whole session on that tomorrow. But I think that's one way, for me, that's one way that we resolve the dilemma. We get ourselves into that kind of relationship. That's one way we resolve the differences or manage the differences. But at least for me, that's quite an unsatisfactory relationship. And yet, there's a real hook in that. I think it's the most natural one for us.
Part of developing friendships, too, is related to proximity. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I find it easier to make friends or when you're living close to someone. So say if you're living in a poor part of the city and I live in poor parts of the city, it's easy to become friends with your next-door neighbor or the person downstairs and so on. But if you move even 5 miles away, when you get home from work or that type of thing, then you just don't go out of your way to see those people. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, a lot of it, I think, is proximity with the people that you meet at work or at school, or, you know, if you're in the military or things like that, people that you see a lot of. Are going to be more of your friends than the people that are distant.
I think the answer to that is exposure. because I think exposure breaks down the stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen this, you know, happen with a lot of people who would not come near those poor people. They would write checks or something. Mm-hmm. But to leave them, serve them at a table, and to talk to them, they would continue to come and serve and talk to them every Saturday night because the stereotype had been broken down for them.
Mm-hmm.
And each one has a each one has a story, and each one is an individual like we are.
But if you do that all day, then when you come home at night, you don't, you know, you just feel like if you're going to invite them over, that you're going to listen to their problems again, and maybe you get to the point where you think, I just don't want to do that anymore. I've been doing this all day. And I think that is part of maybe why we don't invite them home for dinner.
I wanted to make one observation at that point that I had written down in my notes, and that is a lot of what we're talking about here in the list describing the poor, I would call problems. And I was thinking about how we relate to people with problems, and in particular, just to use a given problem, grief. There are people who are grieving. It can be difficult relating to someone who is grieving because they are especially needy, vulnerable, and there's an issue there that can be frightening, a bit threatening. For those who aren't grieving, you don't always know what to say, how to move in to their world, especially if you move in and say the wrong thing and they start to cry, or you feel like you make the problem worse. That can be a bit of a threatening or scary relationship to foster. And yet, for me, to expand on this corollary, I find, and maybe it's because I'm a pastor, but as an individual, I expect that I will be grieving. You know, that's a common human experience. So that I might even dare to be in relationship with them because I expect that I will have to face that sometime too, and I will learn something from that relationship. As I learn about their story and how they are grieving, that's something that that I can carry with me in my life. When I think about poverty, at least for me personally, I don't expect ever to have to face poverty. That may be very naive, but I don't expect to have to face poverty. And so as I think about it, one of the things that's problematic for me is that as I listen to people's stories, there isn't the same kind of motivation to relate to that issue as there would be, say, to grief. So I don't expect to be poor. And it's a lot easier for me then to tune some of this out. And it feels much more like a problem. And for me, part of what makes relationships complicated is that I want to make that problem go away so that I can relate to them on other levels. I can talk about movies or hobbies or church concerns or other things. And I think our time is about up, but it's that part about, I think, making the problem go away or finding a way to relate that I'm framing tomorrow under the heading "Codependency Makes a Poor Universal Language." We've pointed to some hopeful things too, and even though we're leaving this unfinished, I don't feel that's bad because we're going to keep at this, and we've already hinted at some ways in which our relationship with the poor enriches our lives. We're moving towards that. If you don't happen to get here, believe that it's true, and get here the next couple times, we will get there. But I also like the way we're sharing our personal stories and our own experience, and I hope we continue to do that in the next couple times. So, thanks a lot for coming this time. We meet again tomorrow and Saturday. All right.
Thank you.